deputy managing editor at Lookout Landing, and I am joined on this sort of snowy, weirdly spring day by managing editor Kate Prusa. Kate, how are you?
John, you're the only one who has snow. I just went out and got the mail, and it's dry as a bone out there.
It's not like snow. It's been multiple places, too. Well, I mean, it's like, it's 42 degrees, so it can't be like actual snow, but it was like the rain was kind of doing a little waver as it would come down, and it was sort of half-hearted. It would get melted. I don't know what it was. I don't know what to say. I'm not a meteorologist.
Also not spring. Definitely winter.
Well, it's spring training. As we have Matthew Robertson. Matthew, what...
Hey, guys.
Have you ever been to... Matthew, have you... been to spring training? I think we maybe addressed this, but I forget your answer.
I have not. I've never been to spring training.
So I distinctly actually remember, so we were talking about this a little bit before the podcast, and learned on the Wheelhouse podcast with Jerry DePoto, who sponsored today's episode, that Shed Long apparently does not like the taste of water. And I know, Kate, you've been down to Arizona Shed. It finds other ways, apparently, to hydrate. And I guess I was wondering where the, like, worst-tasting water was that you guys have ever been. Because I've been to Tucson, and I've been to a couple places in Arizona, and remember just having some of the, like, most metallic-tasting water.
Yeah, it's a very heavy around. Water in Arizona. It is... I mean, the locals do not drink it generally, not that I've encountered, but it's bad. It doesn't taste good. And, you know, Shed grew up in Alabama. Maybe the water's not so tasty there. Mm-hmm.
So what would you guys replace water with? If water's out of the question, what would your sort of go-to hydration method be?
I hope Shed is, like, constantly drinking Capri Suns. Like, I would not want to do this myself. But I just like the image, or like juice boxes or something. I just like the image of him walking around like with one of those metallic foil pouches at all times.
Do those hydrate you though? That seems like a lot of sugar.
I mean, there's so much sugar in it. Yeah.
At best, a like nullifying situation, I feel like.
It would be hilarious to like see Shed Long like, oh, he scores on a base hit, gets to the dugout, and they just hand him like a fruit punch Capri Sun. Scott Service is like stabbing the straw in and like hands it over.
I mean, I'd be really into that. We have found a full-time role for Ryan. I feel like
let's be honest, Ryan would miss that hole every time.
Not every time. One in four.
Okay, the one time he got it, he'd pound it through the entire Capri Sun and it would explode.
We would have some casualties.
Yes.
Did either of you guys ever drink Sunny D?
Oh, yeah, big time.
No, never a Sunny D person.
So, Sunny D, I had maybe once at like a birthday party for someone in sixth grade where everyone still got, or when I was 6 years old, rather, when everyone still got invited to
everybody's
the entire
party.
Exactly.
Weird flex, but keep going.
And I, that sort of taste influence was so outlandish compared to the number of advertisements for Sunny D that were on Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and like literally everywhere that they showed cartoons growing up, and they just would scream about Sunny D, the power, unleash the power of the sun, and just like have this long rant with a juice box bouncing around, and at the end they'd have a like professional radio guy come in and say contains 5% juice. Like, what?
Yeah, it's like if orange juice got electrocuted. That's what it tastes like.
Yeah. So I have to imagine that some of the people who were making Sunny D later on went to make Four Loko, because like I don't know what the other 95% was going on, but hopefully Shed has something better than that working for him.
Yes, and also better than those small bottle. This was a bigger thing in Philly, but they're called Hugs. Have you ever had those out here? I don't think so.
Just
they
a small bottle of water? I mean,
it's a small bottle of juice. It looks like a grenade. I don't know why it's called a hug, but they were 25 cents at the corner store and like turned your face entirely blue. Like,
wow.
Yeah, they were kind of like the Kool-Aid. I used to drink, in grade school, the Kool-Aid squeezers, I think.
Kool-Aid jammers.
Oh, that was after my time. I think they maybe decided Squeezer wasn't a great name. Yeah. Everything was much more innocent in the 80s. And it was in, like, it almost looked like a Coke bottle, but clear plastic. Yeah.
Yeah, the clear bottle. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that, I mean, all of it is sugar, water, and poison, let's be clear.
Correct.
But Shed, we have good water up here in Seattle, I will say. Or maybe we could all pitch in and get him a Brita filter or something.
Like, there we go.
We can get Shed on. I don't understand. I don't know how long that's going to last with the Mariners being all, like, very nutrition-focused. Like, I think they push drinking water pretty hard, so Shed might
have to. I mean, I would hope so.
He'd love to see
pretty basic tenet of nutrition, I guess.
Yeah, now I just have this image of, like, all the prospects meeting up at that summit and them being like, water? Like, what? Please enlighten us. What is this? None of us have ever heard of this magical elixir you're talking about.
I was going to say, that image that you'd evoked of the tiny little sort of hand grenade, what I was thinking of was Tropic Chillers. I don't know if you guys have ever had these with a Z, Chillers. But they're like made by the same company that makes Buzz Balls, also with Z's.
Oh, no.
And they are.
What on earth are you talking about?
I've dropped a link in.
Oh, no. They look horrible.
So they are. You can get them at, like, just. I would say select convenience stores.
Who is sitting there, like. Who is in product development who's like. How do we get people to drink more alcohol?
Let's make a pina colada in a ball.
I mean, who decided? Who decided? This picture is particularly grotesque that you send to.
I think it's just four people with them stacked, because I think it gives a good display of the variety of options. It does not contain the white one, which is a pina colada.
You had these, John? Did you drink these regularly?
Certainly not regularly. I have had them once because it was the first time I'd ever seen them, and that was the only time I ever had them, and I would not recommend them to anyone because they taste very bad in your mouth.
Just to let the listeners know, John put a link in our little podcast website thing directing us to, like, a blog post about Buzz Balls, and, like, the entire background is just smoke. It starts off with just, like, a giant picture of weed from 420 Bamboo Banga, where the kush just blows in the breeze. Like, this is exactly what I was hoping for.
I did not follow the link. I had just sent, like, a direct link from Google Images, so this full experience is even better.
We'll definitely include a link in the podcast story.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, this is so funny.
This is what happens to those little hug bottles when they, like, turn to a life of crime.
Things go awry. Oh, man.
Oh, also in terrible food and drink stories, today we also had Mets prospect / player Brandon Nimmo getting hurt, falling ill, spending all night, quote-unquote, puking up his guts for eating undercooked chicken. And the Mets have decided to solve this problem by teaching him how to cook. Anyone else. Just Nimmo, I guess.
The Mets seem to have a very responsive, response-based sort of health plan. Not necessarily so preventative.
Mets.
If the Mets are smart, they'll turn this into some kind of content, like the Brandon Nimmo cooking show with, like, Action Bronson or something. I would watch the hell out of that.
Oh, my God, like the Hot Ones, but with Brandon Nimmo learning how to cook and having different prospects in every week to try his dishes.
But it'd be even funnier if it was just, like, basic food. Like, Brandon Nimmo makes a PB&J. Brandon Nimmo makes Top Ramen.
I'm surprised at that.
Brandon Nimmo with only perishables.
Yeah. Well, that's the advanced mm-hmm. version. I mean, cooking chicken is hard. You know, you get it wrong a couple times, you're afraid of overcooking it. That's what I'm going to assume that he did. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once you cover it in sauce, which I also assume he did, you can't really tell. So,
I do not cover my chicken in sauce all the time. I wish, but I think it's very possible he just did not. He slapped a potentially frozen chicken breast on a grill and did
yeah,
not.
No spices whatsoever, no sauce.
Yeah. It was just like, this is chicken. Maybe it's been
a few
space
minutes.
Alien.
Should be good. Num num num.
What if you just like microwaved it? Just like put like a frozen cutlet in the microwave. He's like, all right, dinner is served.
Looks cooked on the outside.
Oh, Brandon Nimmo, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
I don't. You know, like on a private Snapchat, there was like a photo of him like chefing, like sent to somebody. Oh man!
Cut to him puking his guts out. Oh boy.
Well, speaking of puking your guts out,
nice transition,
Matthew,
to the bullpen.
What position group are we concluding with on this podcast?
Yes, great question. We are concluding with the most vomity position group on the team, the Seattle Mariners relief pitchers, who are a real motley crew this season. They got rid of pretty much everyone you would recognize and brought in a whole new team of pitchers to man the back end of games, and it's going to be pretty bad, I think. I think there's not really
early
a world...
Early returns are not great.
Yeah, I just don't see a world in which this is a strength. Like, it would be truly, truly incredible if the bullpen was, like, above average.
Mm-hmm. It's actually, like... I mean, on the one hand, you could say this is a positive for the 2019 team, but it's difficult. Any time that I have like looked at the 2018 or the 2019 roster and thought, you know, this actually isn't so bad. You know, the offense should be pretty solid from start to finish, and well, the starting rotation isn't that strong at the top, but everyone should be okay. And then I get to the bullpen, and I just am like, oh no.
Yeah. You know,
but yeah, like they're 2014. I remember there not being that much confidence in the group, but this really does feel like they threw together some guys, and it's going to be such a steep shift from really the unprecedented luxury that we had last year of
absolutely
of Edwin Diaz.
I've looked up Pecota's projections for the bullpen, and they are, as you can imagine, not great. Not mm-hmm. great. The highest projected is Sean Armstrong. What?
Whoa.
Sean Armstrong. I
think that's not far off. I think Sean Armstrong is not bad at all.
Maybe. I was
not bad at all. That's the bar we have to clear.
ringing endorsement. I was a little... It's just, you know, especially as somebody in a non-closer, non-setup. I mean, I like Sean Armstrong a lot. I love that he has invested in the analytics side, which he wasn't very into before. He says he's got good stuff. You know, he's like Nick Vincent with velocity, as I've said before. But his, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen that at the major league level so much. You know, we've seen him pitch a little bit. And then he had sort of a shaky outing here in the spring the other day. Had some real trouble finding his pitches. So I'll keep an eye on him closely over the rest of the spring. But so far, I would say that my arrow to next to Sean Armstrong's name is currently pointing down question mark.
Yeah, a lot of down question marks for sure. I want to... I want to cite a stat that will probably get beaten to death eventually, but I think we're on the cutting edge of it right now. So if anyone uses it moving forward, please credit Matthew Robertson and the Lookout Landing podcast. Last season, Edwin Diaz had 57 saves, and the current Mariners 40-man roster has 30 saves for their collective careers. So that's what we're looking at, fellas. Oh. It's Hunter Strickland, who has been a closer nominally, and then a bunch of guys who are like way underqualified for that role.
Yeah. And, I mean, even pushing beyond that, I mean, the ostensible veterans are Strickland, as you mentioned, who mm-hmm. has looked solid so far this spring, but coming off not insignificant injury that led to one of his worst years, and that injury came from him punching a window wall.
And not breaking
the wall,
like,
part
you can
of
say
a window.
The wall part of the window won.
Yeah. Yeah, it did not break, which can't have felt great for
right, if
I mean, really,
do that,
that's
you at least
just
want
such
the
a
satisfaction of the
yeah.
shatter.
Yeah, exactly. So that's too bad. I mean, Anthony Swarzak has some experience and has been a decent pitcher, but he hasn't pitched yet this spring, and his shoulder yeah. has not apparently been in great shape, and
I don't know about you, but every time I see shoulder problem, that's like all pitcher injuries are red flags, but shoulder discomfort is like just sirens go off for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for someone his age. He's sneaky old. He's the second oldest pitcher on the team, it looks like, after Wade LeBlanc. I'm just looking at the roster right now. Yeah,
is
Wade
32?
Is 84,
33?
Born in 84, and yeah, Swarzak was born
okay,
in 85.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's not 84 years
old. Wade LeBlanc
not
is 84
old.
Years old. No, but yes, Wade LeBlanc was born in the year 1984, and Swarzak was born in 1985, so he is the second oldest pitcher on the team, and the oldest reliever, I guess.
Narrowly still a millennial, though.
Ooh.
Congrats.
We have Corey Guerin, who has some history of success down there with the Giants.
We've made it past Sean Armstrong, Hunter Strickland, as like, yeah, these guys are probably competent as long as they don't get into fights or completely forget how to throw strikes, into this person has some history of something.
Of being sort of, I mean, what it's all just like, they're all just lottery tickets, right? All these veteran guys are lottery tickets to hope that we can flip them to a contender at the deadline, right? So.
Zach Roscup, same thing.
Yeah, Roscup, I thought, looked pretty good in his inning. I mean, he's tricky because the lefty, but I think he's pretty analytics friendly. I could see Zach Roscup being a sneaky good contributor to this team this year.
And a big issue for him has been health, right? He's been injured almost every year, I think, that he's had a shot at the big, so it's not out of the question that he could have sort of a Oliver Perez almost kind of role where he with you know, full season of health, finally puts it together as a, you know, good contributor and is flippable at the deadline to a team like Cleveland that just needs something from its bullpen.
Right.
Yeah, and Roscup is the only like true lefty reliever. Like, we have Elias, who's going to be like a spot starter, long relief guy, but Roscup is the only one for like those sixth, seventh, eighth innings where you got to get one lefty out. So he's probably like in a position to like really show out if he pitches well. Like, he's going to get a lot of opportunities, I feel like, to just get lefties out. And if he does that well, then hopefully we can get a young, better player for him.
and there really isn't like competition for that, you know, anywhere else. Like, I'm trying to think because there are so many left-handed pitchers in the starting rotation, but there really aren't very many at all that are working as relievers.
It's just Ricardo Sanchez is in the mix, but he's probably not going to be like that prominent on this team.
They hopefully want to see him as a – yeah. There's Tanuda is a lefty, right? Matt Tanuda?
Tanuda is a lefty, yes.
But I don't know that he's – yeah, maybe you'll see him midseason. I don't know, but – yeah, so it's a slim from the left side, outside of the rotation, which is the exact opposite.
Yeah, funny. Let's talk about some high variance guys, like Gerson. We've been calling him Gerson Bautista, but of course it is Gerson. Gerson the person. So Picada does not see him contributing a ton of value, thinking his DRA is going to be in the mid-fives. But I have seen, we've now seen him twice. And okay, I didn't see him today. So we're really going off of a radio feed of one outing and then the video from the other day. But it seems like the slider, like he can spot that for strikes. And if he can just get the fastball under control, maybe he loses a few ticks off of it. Maybe it's 96, not 99. I am fine with them, like, maybe backing his velocity down a little bit in order to work on his command. And that will play. Like, if he can, that slider is nasty. It has a ton of late movement. It has made batters look silly. So, actually, I think there was a little bit of footage from today where you saw him striking Jose Ramirez out, I want to say. Let's see if I can find it. Sure. But anyway, I know that a lot of people are down on Gearson the person, but I like him, and I think he could be a fun surprise. And also, if they can really get something out of him that the Mets couldn't, it would make me feel really good about our pitching development.
Yeah. I think Bautista, I mean, part of the pleasant piece with him is he's 23. You know, I think it's very easy to sort of set in stone that what a guy is at a certain age, but you know, when you have a guy who throws that hard and ostensibly, you know, has shown strikeout stuff in the minors, you just, especially if they can get some work on pitch design, as you mentioned, you know, especially, you know, I don't know what the overlap would be, but a guy who we should also talk about, like, who's got a really very similar profile, even though very different body types, is Dan Altavilla in terms of averaging 95 to 99 on their fastball and has a slider, but has not gotten quite the results that they want from that, and sort of trying to adjust their pitch design and adjust their mechanics to make that more effective. It would be very wonderful to see. I think those two actually are probably the two pitchers I'm most excited to watch out of this group.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I'm pretty ready to become a Gearson super fan, just because he has like a very interesting profile to me, like just a hard throwing like beanpole basically. I think he's listed at like 190 and is like very like lanky and tall. It's kind of like similar in body type at least to Jordan Hicks on the Cardinals. Who throws like 111 miles an hour. I don't expect Gearson to do that, but if he can just be like a little sliver of Jordan Hicks and like harness all the power in his very wiry frame, then I'll just be like watching all of his outings this year, like Amy Poehler and Mean Girls with my video camera and like dancing along. that's what I hope, at least. It could go poorly, but like my number one goal is that he becomes like the next like Mariners closer of the future, because I think just like hard fastball and wipeout slider is like a pretty good repertoire for a closer. But like, who knows? That's kind of my feeling on any of these guys, is like, who knows what we're going to get? It could be like a breakout for some of them, or some of them might be like out of the league pretty quickly. We will have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it could be too a guy that we don't even know who it is. Oh, it was Leonis Martin that he struck out on the slider. It's a little bit easier to strike out, maybe, but it could be somebody, you know, it could be some minor leaguer who just takes huge steps forward all of a sudden, like maybe Joey Gerber, like just kind of comes out of nowhere. Maybe Art Warren, who we haven't seen yet this, I don't know why we haven't seen him yet this year, but which makes me worry that he's maybe injured somewhere, but maybe him, maybe, you know, there's the bullpens are fungible, and this one is more fungible than most, I think. And I think it's exciting too, because you're going to really see guys, like, they all have a chance. Everybody has a chance at this bullpen. So I think you're going to see a lot of competition over the next few weeks of spring training. Well, less than few weeks, I guess. We really don't have, it's such a weird schedule this year, but
yeah,
I'm finding I'm much more interested in watching the relievers this year. I do like watching the hitting as well, see the young guys come out, but for me, they're really like can't miss, I don't get up to like get a drink of water or whatever is during the pitching innings, because I want to see what each guy has to bring.
Totally. And it was really cool to see Altavilla like have a moment already with that, the nutmeg slider.
Nutmeg slider.
Do any of you, by the way, know the origins of nutmeg? Like, I know it's a soccer term, obviously, but like, how did that start? Like, how did someone see a ball go through someone's legs and declare nutmeg? Like, that's, it's very strange to me.
I thought it had to be something filthy, because nutmeg just sounds like something dirty to me. Getting nutmegged, nutmegging, like... I Googled it with a lot of trepidation when I saw it kind of blowing up on social media.
Yeah.
But no, I have no clue. I hope that John's silence indicates that he is busily Googling.
I certainly am, because I do not know.
But
origin of the term is, well, I guess it's up for debate. Some people say that it's just because it passes by the nuts of a player.
I figured.
And someone says that nutmegs were such a valuable commodity that unscrupulous exporters were to pull a fast one by mixing a helping of wooden replicas into the sacks being shipped to England. Being nutmegged soon came to imply stupidity on the part of the duped victim and cleverness on part of the trickster.
Whoa. I really hope it's that second one.
That is from Peter Seddon in his book Football Talk, The Language and Folklore of the World's Greatest Game.
That sounds like an unimpeachable source to me.
That's the great thing about soccer, is that like some of the terms are from 18th century English spice dealers. Like,
yeah, like just like edgy ones too. Like,
yeah, yeah. These guys were basically like just like the original people who were like cutting cocaine to save costs, but they were doing it with nutmeg. Like, oh, proper prank, innit?
Having flavor. Oh, having flavor was the original cocaine.
Flavor. That's a fun word to say in a British accent. Flavor.
And I believe you spell it with a U in across the pond.
You sure do. Nailed it. All right.
So, back to Dan Altavilla, who it did already have sort of a moment go viral. I don't think he meant to throw that pitch where it was, but... he was
captured on. It did not appear expected.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think he was expecting the batter to swing at it. And his reaction has been kind of a little embarrassed, a little humble. but that doesn't take away from the fact that he had that guy in an 0-2 count. Like, other than he gave up a long ball, he missed his location. But he's looked pretty good so far this spring, and I would urge anyone who's interested in learning about like. Pitch grips and whatnot. There's a cool thread on Twitter. I retweeted it from Eric Jaggers, who worked with Altavilla over this offseason to adjust his slider grip. So, like, you know, Altavilla would send him pictures of what he was doing, and they went over the TrackMan data together. And it was really, if you're interested in that kind of thing, it was really cool to see on the ground with application how that advanced data is helping make players better. And props to Alt for always being willing to learn and looking into that kind of stuff. I'm hoping for him, again, like, not just because I want him contributing to the bullpen, but also I feel like hard work should be rewarded, so it'd be great to see him have a good year.
Yeah. He's definitely my favorite, I think, of the returning guys, just because I love sort of, like, his, like, I don't know how you would describe it. Just, like, his aura of, like, super jacked guy, but also, like, biggest smile I've ever seen. Like, he has that weird mix of, like, I could definitely kick your ass, but I'm also, like, going to be really nice to you. So I'm into that. And I want him to just succeed from a baseball standpoint.
One anecdote about Dan Altavilla, I will say, is when he was because his second grade teacher, I think, or fourth grade teacher, something like that. One of his elementary school teachers uses Twitter and tweeted about this, that his class was doing like a fundraiser for cancer. And, you know, all the kids would bring in like their spare change every day, nickels, dimes, whatever. And he had $40 saved, and he brought it in and didn't do it in front of anyone. He gave it to his teacher after class, and he said, "This is what I want to contribute." And the teacher called home and was like, "Ah, did you know he did this? Did he take this from you?" And I said, no, you know, we talked about it at home. He felt it was really important. Those are his savings, like his birthday money, his Christmas money, and he really wanted to donate it. And just, I mean, doing that, and not only just doing that, but doing it outside of, like, the public eye, like, not doing it in front of his classmates or whatever, not doing it for the accolade, just doing it because he felt like it was the right thing to do. I just think that that speaks so highly of someone's character. And at such a young age.
It's a good group.
They are nice, young men. They really are. Evan White picking up that guy's baseball cards. I mean,
that's good stuff. Speaking of another 95 to 100 mile per hour throwing, seemingly very nice fellow, we will not see Sam Tuivailala for the first half of the year, probably. But hopefully by around the All-Star break, we'll see him back from his torn Achilles. But just when you mentioned sort of the high variance guys, I think that's another person who fits that bill very, very easily. You know, he has the velocity. He has a decent track record already as a solid pitcher. And, you know, really is someone who I think could be valuable for the Mariners either as a trade chip or on a future competitive team. So it's a bummer to not see him, but I'm excited to see him come back. Even if it's not necessarily a huge midseason addition, that's someone worth watching.
Yeah, I can't remember a player who has endeared himself to me more with less playing time than Sam Tuivailala.
Yeah, like, I think that's exactly,
he's thrown like 10 pitches as a Mariner, mm-hmm. and yet he's just been he was so invested in the team's success. He was so, mm-hmm. he's been working so hard, like, mm-hmm. just great guy, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him so hard. Like you said, Kate, when he came to the Mariners and, like, immediately got hurt, but then kept, like, basically just super fanning the team, I was like, oh my god, you are like such a pure person. And I was also worried that there was maybe like some Stockholm syndrome going on, but I think that it was just genuine enthusiasm upon sort of looking at it like more and more, and the fact that he keeps doing it and like truly seems to love being a Seattle Mariner, which is a nice change of pace from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, a lot of the, I mean, Gerson he really enjoys his new Mariner outfit. His whole Instagram is just like covered with pictures of himself wearing the uniform, and guys seem happy here. I know this is spring training and this is what everyone says during spring training, but we have like a track record.
Who was the kid who, like, one of the prospects who, like, photoshopped him throwing, like, a flaming baseball in a Mariners uniform?
That was Dyson Arias.
Yes, thank you.
From Everett. Dyson.
Everett's closer.
Yes, closer of the future, we hope. Somebody I know he's in Peoria, so I'm really hoping we get a little bit of a picture, a little sneak peek of him at some point.
If he turns sideways, you will not.
Yeah, you know, he's definitely
real skinny.
Extremely Edwin built young fellow, but he's pretty exciting.
Yeah, solid young pitch.
Well, let's talk about the Rugrats a little bit. The kids on the farm, who some of them are obviously with the Mariners in spring training, and we've seen some of them. But there's also, like you mentioned, like the Art Warrens, the Wyatt Mills of the world, who are sort of shrouded in mystery, especially for the casual fan. What can we expect from those guys this year? Like, where are they going to be? Where do they fit into the equation of, you know, 2021, 2022 and all that?
It's a super bummer to me that we're not seeing a lot of these guys right now, because we have to go through like the Tyler Danishes of the world, and all these guys, the Brandon Brennans and all these dudes that they picked up from like whatever scrap heaps.
Brandon Brennan is definitely like an industry plant. Like, he's not a real baseball player. That's just a guy that they're like, we need a body.
Rule 5 pick that you cannot find video of anywhere.
No, you really can't. And even he threw an inning today and there was obviously no video and he just got shelled.
Yeah.
So not a great first outing from a guy you have to keep on your 25 man or send him back. But I'm kind of feeling like at this point they're, the Rockies might be like, no thanks.
I think he had one earlier, but I think it was like a perfect microcosm of what has made him like kind of unappealing, was, or has kept him in the minors, I guess, was just that, like, a number of strikeouts and then like two walks, and it's just not been stellar. But maybe this was his debut. Maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to look at, I could have sworn I saw him earlier, but regardless, yeah, not a stellar showing so far.
Not a sterling debut. And Matt Festa, if we're talking about guys on the farm, didn't have a great outing either. But I will say he seemed to really pull it around and was able to land his slider for strikes. So I'm going to hopefully, and because I've seen Festa pitch a lot at higher levels, we've seen him pitch in MLB, we've seen him pitch in the AFL against kind of top prospects. I'm going to say that I'm not worried by this outing from Matt Festa, because it really felt like it was a genuinely rust-shaking outing. Brendan has not earned the same.
No. And Festa looked good last year, too. Like, that, yeah. I mean, they're just about... I mean, Festa, I think... I don't want to damn with faint praise, but, like, Chasen Bradford was very solid last year, and I think Festa can be at least that this year, and I think we'll probably have both of them at various different points. I worry that Brennan will be much more of a, oh, the bases are loaded, because Brennan came in and walked, you know, three guys, whereas you know, maybe you're going to get hit hard a little bit, but Festa and Bradford have shown a little more command thus far.
But the beauty of, like, Brennan hypothetically walking the bases loaded is that it doesn't matter. Like, it's
that's
fine.
Very true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's very true.
Obviously, like, I want everyone on the Mariners to succeed and be happy, but, like, this is the year where I would rather them win 68 games than 78, just because, like, if you're going to not be in the playoffs, it's better to be super far away than, like, real close, you know? So I feel like we're going to just have this
and
season.
And you want a better draft pick. That's a big difference on a draft pick, too. Going
exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. But it's going to be fun to, like, see the Mariners, like, just especially if some of the bigger names, if you can even call them that, like, do succeed and get traded. Like, then we'll just be, like, in August and September just, like, spinning a giant wheel being like, which reliever is going to blow the lead today?
Yeah.
It looks like we got Brandon Brennan. Come on down. Like, that's going to be fun. I'm excited to watch just the parade of relievers that we're all going to forget in 3 years.
Yeah. The options there are not fantastic. There are, while we're digging into the farm, I think there is a little bit more to be excited about in the future. Kate mentioned Joey Gerber and Art Warren as two names. Wyatt Mills, Matthew, you mentioned as well. The Mariners have done for whatever this may mean. The Mariners have done a really good job of churning out MLB quality relief pitching in the past few years. They transformed Edwin Diaz into a world beater. They saw Dan Altavilla was, you know, going to benefit from a bullpen role. And they've managed to spin guys like Nick Vincent into really solid players. So we've seen a few other guys from that group. Jack Anderson is a submariner who got pretty unlucky in his first outing, but looked good. Sam Delaplane and Nolan Hoffman are guys drafted the last couple of years who have done excellent jobs so far in the lower levels. And even just random pickups like David McKay and Tenuta, who we mentioned earlier, just literally got for a dollar from the Royals, that have become solid prospects as bullpen arms. So, they're not going to... I think in the future, if the Mariners are struggling to get over the hump, I don't think it will be because of their bullpen, I guess is what I would say. I don't think that will be a weakness long term.
Yeah, I think for all the questions you can have about how they develop, or about player development, which we haven't seen good player development in Seattle in the past decade. So And the jury's still, you know, it's early on a lot of stuff because we flipped a lot of the low-level guys, and then you see them blossom into stars elsewhere. I'm thinking about Luis Renjifo, and it's like, whoa. Mm. Well, how do they not see that coming? But, you know, there's going to be Luis Renjifos when you are making 50 transactions a month, so...
Mm. Right. And this year's bullpen, like, is just going to be basically a placeholder. Like, none of these guys are
right.
part of... the, like, bigger picture, I don't think, at least, of, like, the guys who are going to be on the next Mariner playoff team. Maybe one or two of them, I guess, but it's definitely not, like a foundational bullpen by any means.
No, you're Altuvilla, you're Festa, like, maybe, because he's 23, Gerson. But they have, and I mean, they've got time to work out these guys and try to optimize them. But I'm not too worried about this aspect. I agree with you, John, that one thing I think we can feel pretty good about is how they've developed relief talent.
Yeah, it's going to be... I think it's going to be frustrating. As Matthew said, we're going to have that wheel a little bit
yeah.
this year. And in just the general regard of like watching a baseball game, hoping for good outcomes, I think that will be difficult because... And, you know, you want it to not be just a huge issue because that can be discouraging and frustrating and distracting even. But, yeah, it's going to be... even if the bullpen doesn't look great this year, I think, especially because of how variant bullpens can be, even the best ones, there's not too much... You know, like the Astros last year, by all fielding independent metrics, by pretty much every... I think literally by fielding independent metrics had the best bullpen in MLB history, and they had one of the worst bullpens in the league by results. Like, they just, the only reason they didn't win like 110 games was because their bullpen just kept blowing stuff. Like, they kept having Hector Rondon or Rendon just like come in and give up. Like, that entire
yeah.
4-game sweep, I think the Mariners took. They took down Osuna, they took down Rondon, they took down, like, Davinsky. Like, they just kept clearing through these guys who were very talented, but just for whatever reason it wasn't working out. So, yeah, there's a lot that just... You're not going to want to read too much into it. It'll be nice if we see some guys really establish themselves, but I think most of it you'll be hoping for trade bait.
Just want to jump in real quick while we're talking about the Astros bullpen to remind everyone that Ken Giles punched himself in the face last season. That was a real thing that happened. He got so mad that he punched his own face in disgust. That's it. That's all I wanted to
yeah.
say. Just
no,
remember
I
mean, that happened.
That's right.
Stay classy, Astros.
Yes.
Although they did ship him right on out the door, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think that was about as red of a red flag as you can see. Like, this guy is bad and also maybe, like, unhinged, so we need to get rid of him.
I think that that's a good... I mean, another thing that I think, beyond the talent of the guys who are actually there, and, like, we don't have Brian DeLunas out there with the bullpen all the time, but it's cool to see the guys get done with their bullpens or they get done with their innings in spring training and they immediately go over and start chatting up one of the coaches. And the benefit of having so many more coaches and the bullpen guys feeling like there's somebody who's kind of looking out for them. They have somebody who's guiding them, the general kind of camaraderie. I'm hoping that Hunter Strickland doesn't feel the need to punch any walls. Let's put it that way. I'm hoping that it is expressed that we here deal with our emotions in a different way. So,
right. So I want to talk about something before we get to listener questions. This was sort of a question thought experiment that we were having amongst ourselves, and that is the closer music that we're going to hear this year at T-Mobile Park. Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to the Edwin Diaz song. What was it? Master Jax Blast, whatever.
Blaster
Jax.
Narco.
Yeah.
Blaster Jax.
With just the greatest horn section of all time.
Oh, God. That was.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Don't even get the like Diplo song that they had before that, which was also pretty good. The Major Lazer one.
Yeah, that's all gone. No more Fernando Rodney. animals, which I also really enjoyed. So I think we should help out the Mariners relievers and maybe give them some suggestions for what music to use. I think it's pretty clear from everything we've seen and heard that Hunter Strickland will be the closer. And I feel like, well, first of all, closers in general, I feel like go for the more like aggro music, which makes sense. Yes. They're trying to get pumped. And Hunter Strickland, as we've seen from his punchiness, seems like a pretty aggro guy. So I was thinking like maybe some Slipknot or Korn would be on brand for him. But then I saw his interview during the most recent like spring training game that was on TV, and he came off as like very nice and docile, but like low key, maybe not that smart. So so I was thinking,
it's just the Southern accent.
No, well, yeah, that's, I'm not trying to equate
Southern
with dumb.
I don't think he's dumb. I just, you know, we're culturally coded, I think, to hear that accent sometimes and be like,
I mean, if I'm being truthful, I wasn't even referring to the accent, so you put that on all Southern people right there, Kate. But I guess what I was trying to say is, like, he just comes off as, like, almost, like, he, you know, most people know him for the punching thing, and then he does this, like, very wholesome interview, and it seems like he's almost, like, not in on the joke. So I was thinking it would be really funny if he did Spinal Tap music. Like, if he came out to, like, Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight or something that's, like, a parody of rock music, because he's kind of a parody of this, like, super aggressive
super
reliever.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, just loud music is what I think should be Hunter Strickland's thing. Even if it's not good, just, like, have it be loud.
Well, then that
which
would
is what Spinal Tap
Steve Cishek's music all over again.
We could at the very
I
least
don't even remember
like
what Cishek
Tenacious D. Oh, he was Danger Up in the Club.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
How
he
quickly
was
you forget.
I didn't
he
go to a lot
danger.
Of games in that era. I
all
you don't get
in
the
club.
Intro music at home.
Did you know that Hunter Strickland posted on his Instagram and on Twitter asking for recommendations for his closing song?
Well, there you go. People flood him with Spinal Tap songs.
And I think he offered a prize to the person whose song he actually picked. So.
He
oh,
did.
That's cool.
I don't remember exactly what it was. But
I think
yeah.
he signed cleats.
The prize is he punches you in the face.
No.
But it doesn't break your face.
No. No, he actually gets hurt. Oh man, yeah, Hunter Strickland, if you're listening, please do not fight me. I would lose so quickly.
I think that that's admirable that Hunter Strickland A, recognized that this is a good chance to endear himself to a new fan base, because people love to give their opinions about stuff, but also that he knows that he should, you know, maybe ask for some help, ask for some suggestions. So I saw like a few good recommendations in the thread, but I don't know if I would let the unwashed masses pick something as near and dear to me as my walk-up song.
No, it's a good idea to get a lot of input and then choose the one you like the best, which seems like that's what he's doing.
Yeah, he could go. I guess I would be a like permanent fan of him if he went with like Misery Business by Paramore.
Oh yeah, dude.
Because, like, that's, like, a pretty, like, it's not quite parody because, like, it just is a dope song. But, like, it would be hilarious. And also, like, I wonder how many, like, female-led songs closers have walked out to. Not, like, that needs to be, like, a, you know, statement or anything. But just, like, I think that's a really badass song in a way. But it's also would be hilarious. And somehow would still fit the mood of Hunter Strickland's coming in to close a game. Like,
yeah, that song rips. I would be so into that, just if we could hear that 40 times a year. Even if it like goes poorly on the field, just knowing that it started with Misery Business is a-okay with me.
Oh yeah,
I think I want to go old school and maybe suggest some Heart as a nod both to Seattle, if we're talking about like female led rock bands. Barracuda, maybe. I was trying to think if there was anything that had Hunter in it as a title, but
I know there's an EDM DJ named Bass Hunter. which probably makes decent closer music, but that's not really my cup of tea.
I can't see Hunter Strickland being a big EDM guy either. Maybe.
Yeah, that's probably true.
The problem is, I think he listens a lot to country music, and I regretfully inform you that those songs do not rock out so hard.
They do not slap.
They do not slap. They do not slap.
I like country music, and there's a guy named Hunter Hayes, but Hunter Hayes is not what you would want to walk up to, because it's very croony.
Yeah.
I
mean,
there's
I don't know.
There's a Pharrell song called Hunter.
Oh.
Which sounds very Robin Thicke combined with Pharrell era music. So, not sure about this one, actually.
I would like any closer. It doesn't have to be Hunter Strickland. Anyone who's coming out to walk up music. Right now, I'm super into the Billie Eilish. Yes. The What Do You Want From Me? Dun, dun, dun. I wanna end me. And it's like got all these scary, it sounds like music that they would play on like a hipster haunted mansion ride. So I find it so scary and it's different. And that's what I would want as closer music. I would want something that's like, people are like, what the hell is that? Although I've always argued it for a long time, I would come out to a Slater Kinney song because, a lot of people who don't have experience with Slater Kinney would be very wrong-footed by that. Dig me out, dig me in. Yeah, that would be what I would want to walk up to.
There aren't that many chill closer songs. I mean, we saw this with Edwin actually, even who like Edwin wanted like a really chill sort of like, like Latin song as his walk up or his entrance music, and the Safeco people were like, we kind of need something to get the crowd hype for you appearing. Like, we can't just have everyone being super chill. But, like, for a guy like Edwin, and for, I think, probably a lot of closers who are so, like, get hyped up and then come in and throw gasoline, like, it's dangerous if you have the wrong amount of hype.
That's true. And also, though, I mean, it kind of points up to the fact that, like, what a banger is like has cultural overtones, right? So like the song he wanted, I think, is considered to be largely a banger in like the Latino community, but it does not translate to the largely white audience of Safeco. So I did like that they like took a little bit of his song and like kind of mixed it in. And I hope that Edwin wound up liking it. I'm sure that he's going to use that No Limite. Mi flow no tiene limite. You know that one that he was in the music video for? Mikey Woods, I think is his name. I'm sure, I'll be interested to see if he uses that this year, if the Mets put the kibosh on it. Because, again, it's like not a totally rock-out song, but it is. I mean, I like it. I think it's catchy.
Yeah. I think if we end up in a world where Anthony Swarzak is the closer, then we can go with something non-threatening, some easy listening, like Steely Dan or like Michael McDonald. That would be so funny. Do you guys know, do you know Yamo Be There?
You have mentioned this, but I barely. Tell us about Yamo Be There.
It's, oh man. It's like a 1980s, early 80s, James Ingram, Michael McDonald cut. It's spelled YAH space Mo, letter B there. Yamo Be There. I'm going to pull up the lyrics real quick. Let me paint you guys a picture. So let's say it's late May at T-Mobile Park. The Mariners are beating the Texas Rangers or something, 7-5. They need someone to batten down the hatch. The PA announcer comes over the speakers. Now pitching for your Seattle Mariners, Anthony Swarzak. And then it's just Michael McDonald going, never be lonely, lost in the light. Just run from the darkness, looking for the light. Cause it's a long, hard road that leads to a brighter day. Don't let your heart grow cold, just reach out and call his name. Yamo Be There. Yamo Be There. That's what I want.
I want you singing it to come over.
just Matthew, like, talk about nothing around him, sitting in a chair, two hands on a mic, Like just two hands on a mic, singing straight, deadpanning, like
yeah, yes. Head to toe eight. In white linen, just yeah. Looking fresh.
Like yes. Just looking off into the distance, just
on
singing,
the jumbotron
singing,
at safe just, at
exactly.
T-Mobile.
Oh yeah,
people are like yes. Leaving yes. In mass. They're terrified.
Again, no. You're sort this of doing the cult. Them a favor.
This is yeah. The cult initiation portion. If you've stayed this long, you're basically in. Like,
oh, man. Just the idea of Michael McDonald being somehow involved with the Mariners is so funny to me.
I'm all about wacky walk-up songs, and I hope we see some, with all the personality that we have on the team now, I hope we see some fun choices.
Yeah.
Can't wait
I worry
to see what
that
Shed's walk-up song is going to be.
I worry that Major League Baseball is going to be like 75% sicko mode this year. Just like every
oh,
player
it's
is
totally
going to choose that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's 100%. Yeah.
That's hey, 100% KFWA worked excellently, so I don't know what the issue is there.
That is true.
Right. Okay, let's move to some actual questions that people asked us that have nothing to do with Michael McDonald. Unfortunately, kind of mad at the listeners
come on,
for that.
People.
Yeah, but these are some good questions. So the first one comes from Zach Ducalon. They want to know about the bullpen, obviously. And they said, it seems like a lot of bullpen spots for opening day are already claimed by people the front office probably hopes to trade, like Strickland, Guerin, and Swarzak. How many relievers should the Mariners have to start the year? And also, are there veterans who could lose their spots? So there's a lot in that question. I guess, how many Mariners or how many relievers should they have to start the year is interesting to me because sort of roster construction is always fascinating with me. In the American League, because you don't really need pinch hitters, but also I don't really think you ever need, like, 9 relievers. So I'm curious what you guys have to say about this.
I'm team many relievers, so I'm going to sit out while John...
Well, no, you go for it. You
no, we can have differing opinions.
except that team many relievers is going to be compromised this year by the fact that I'm not sure what's going to go on with Malik Smith's health, so we're probably going to have an extra outfielder, and then we're probably also going to have a utility guy, and I don't think Dylan Moore, sweet as he seems, can play the outfield. So, and then I still don't know about
he
the
has played
situation.
The outfield.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so anyway, that complicates. Like, I love a good, thick bullpen, good, robust bullpen, mm-hmm. full of many, many people, but... yeah, I don't know if the roster is going to allow for that this year. So I could see a lot of them, like, Harrison, I believe, has options.
Yeah, they've got
Altavilla,
a lot of options.
I think, has options. Like, Armstrong doesn't, so Armstrong will definitely be there, but...
Right. Actually, well, looking at it, I take that back. So there's not... actually a ton of flexibility to open the year. I'm looking at roster resource here. And so Strickland, Swarzak, Guerin, Armstrong, Roskup, Roenis, and Rumbelow are all out of options.
It's another totally great fun fact about Nick Rumbelow.
and for that matter, Brandon Brennan is a Rule 5 pick, so they would have to return him if they didn't want to keep him. So that's 8 guys right there. And that, you know, that really kind of puts you in a challenging spot. Because all the guys, I would say several of the guys who are better are the guys with options. You know, Altavilla, Bradford, Festa, Batista, they all have... at least one option. I think Altavilla only has one option left. The rest have 2 or 3. But, yeah, I think we'll see... In the Japan series, you get a 28-man roster, so we'll probably get at least 1 or 2 more, and that will be good. You'll probably get 9, but I can't see them going with less than 8 relievers to start, especially since the Mariners are trying to be... tactful with how they're using Yusei Kikuchi, and they're having Felix on the roster, and Felix is a total wild card vis-a-vis ability to go long, and you know, Wade and Mike Leake are both guys who are very judicious, you know, are quick with their pitches, but sometimes can get rocked every once in a while. So it's weirdly tight, actually, coming out of the gate. I mean, there's going to be injuries. Someone's going to get hurt or whatever. But, yeah, there's actually I there's a bit of a crunch there.
Well, we don't open with Swarzak, right, either. Swarzak is...
Yeah, Swarzak will probably be on the DL to start. So there's at least that's at least one spot there.
Gives you a little bit of flexibility, yeah, so that you can at least get the problem is that spring training is so weird and chopped up and short, and even when they go to Japan, they'll have half the guys there and the other half here, so you don't really have any consensus. Everybody's watching the same people do things.
Yeah.
And it really puts them in a bad spot.
I think Bradford and Altavilla are probably the two first guys up. That would be my guess. I don't know if you guys feel differently. But, you know, I just would expect Festa and Bautista to spend, you know, not that they necessarily need to spend more time in the minors, but that it's not going to hurt them to spend more time in the minors. Same thing with Ruben Alaniz, I don't know if we mentioned at all, but also probably could use a little more time in the minors. So, I think we see an 8-man pen this year. And
I thought Alaniz was maybe being looked at as a starter. Am I crazy?
It's possible.
Am I mixing him up with someone?
He has, I think, been more of a reliever in his career.
Our voices are going up like this, which means neither of us really know.
Let's see. We'll find out through the magic of the internet. He has been a reliever predominantly since 2016.
Ruben Alaniz and Ricardo Sanchez. I get them mixed up.
Yes. Yeah, haven't seen Alaniz this spring yet so far. I think he was maybe having visa issues in addition to Calixte, Orlando Calixte, but I think he should hopefully be there by now. We don't know. We'll see. But, they'll be able to put Tui Vailala. Well, they are able to put Tui Vailala on the 60-day DL at any point, and they will do that. So that'll be able to open up a 40-man spot. But just finding a 25-man spot after Japan, that may just kind of come down to if someone gets hurt.
Yeah, I wasn't listening to anything you guys were saying. I was on the Yamo Be There Wikipedia page. This song, dude, this song won a Grammy, 1985. Best R&B performance by a duo or group with vocals. And then the remixed version.
That's kind of niche.
Yeah, it's sweet.
That's like a lot of sections, but yeah. That's
yeah,
a Grammy.
And then the remixed version by Jellybean Benitez did numbers in the UK. So, a lot going
hell
on
yeah
with Yamo Be There. All right, let's wrap it up with one more question. This one comes to us from Alyssa Ching, and all they said was, gonna need you to rank them being the relievers, by most to least powerful hair, which
ooh,
I love. It's a great question.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, though, in looking over their relievers, a lot of really boring haircuts, like a lot of guys who are just keeping it short and tight. I think most powerful hair has to be Harrison of the guys on the 40-man right
by
now.
By leaps and bounds.
Yeah, Harrison has a lot of flow going on. I think it's only going to get bigger, I hope. I hope he doesn't get haircuts and, like, his hat starts to not fit. I always love that look. But other than that...
He's already close to that.
Yeah. No, he is, yeah. So I'm going to be monitoring that with my Amy Poehler video camera.
I enjoy his ombre effect where it's, like, the hair very close to his head is dark and then everything that kind of extends beyond is bleached. So it makes him look like he's kind of perpetually got a halo around his head, which is a power move, I feel. Like
100%.
Just basically declaring yourself a saint in front of your competition is an underrated power move. I can't believe no one's brought up Corey Guerin, who's obviously...
That's some dang hair. Him and Colin Kober have... Some flow for sure.
Yeah, Guerin's definitely second in my power rankings after Harrison.
I think that there's a... We don't have him up. He's not on the 40-man. But Tyler Danish has some extremely weird hair situation going on.
Oh, yeah.
In that it's like kind of a cloud around his head. It actually looks like he is trying to imitate the shape of an actual Danish in the way that it goes, and that it emerges from his skull. It's very weird. And then he's got this like beard thing too. So it's like kind of a full all the way around. And he just, I mean, he looks like... He just looks a little unkempt, a little.
Yeah,
like,
I don't like it. He looks like
the
kid
woods.
That would wear pajamas to school. That's the
yes,
vibe I get from him.
That is 100% the vibe. So, I don't know if it's if that's power or not. I mean, I think it's power to have such a DGAF approach to.
That's
like,
true.
Yeah, I'm pajama kid. Deal with it. Like, yeah. Okay. All right.
There's some like good. Back in the day, or like future photos, like Joey Gerber had fantastic hair in college. I've actually linked another photo here for y'all, as well as just like some exceptional pitch face. And Brandon Brennan had some flow back in the day, but now I think he's kind of just a clean cut,
generic white reliever, 1A on the chart.
Yeah, we didn't have enough of those, so I'm glad he's here.
Did Rowenis have some like interesting hairstyles in the off season that he got rid of, or am I misremembering?
Rowenis always has like his stuff shaved into his head. That is pretty cool. You know, like he's big on the shaved designs, kind of Diaz-ish with that. And he will have matching haircuts with his son a lot of times, who looks exactly like him. So
that's pretty good.
Again, I think that's a strong power move, is not just
to
have the excellent.
Yeah, we love that.
To be like, bitch, I come in two sizes. Like, yes, that is strong.
Tui also had some, like, curls coming out of the back of his hat for a little bit, as I recall.
Yeah, he had potential, but then I was looking at his Instagram before we started, and he definitely cut his hair short. So, like, with a hat on, you won't even be able to see his hair anymore.
Yeah.
He did. That was a bummer.
Yeah, but there's always time. The thing about hair is it grows back.
Jason Bradford has a beard, which is, like, qualifies him for, like, at least the middle of the pack here, which is a pretty rough commentary on the group right now. Yeah, it's not a strong group in that regard, which is a real shame. Hopefully we can get some inspiration.
Just googled a picture
Coburn
of Tommy
Danish.
Malone, and he's totally clean cut too. Like he, I mean, you're a left-handed reliever. You could really go to town here, Tommy, but just not going after it, not living your best life.
No. So to recap, the Mariners reliever is not great at pitching and not great with hair either.
Excellent news.
Oh.
It is about Taylor with an E, Scott.
Oh, yeah, Taylor Scott.
The South African.
Yes.
And I have once again sent a link to his Twitter, which has a great bit of information for a guy named Taylor Scott, because I was just thinking in my head, man, Taylor Scott probably has boring hair, but... what an opportunity he's missing, because his name's Taylor Scott, and the only way you necessarily remember Taylor Scott is if he stood out in some way, and boy does he.
Really
with his
does.
Twitter profile photo, with the deepest V I have ever seen, next to a sunset, on a farm, with a beard,
yes.
With shoulder-length hair.
Taylor Scott was my responsibility for the NRI section of the article, so I am dropping in a link of him... on a surfboard, looking like a snack, looking like a surf model, with his hair kind of flowing behind him as he's standing on a surfboard, which is...
He's just chilling with some lions in one of these photos.
Yeah, that's South Africa, man.
I guess.
Scythifica.
Scythifica.
I should probably stop doing accents and impressions.
I think you should continue. Here's one of him with a cheetah. A cheetah? Okay, I can't do accents. Only Matthew.
Yeah, that just sounded like you saying it slower.
It's just a photo of his ass while he's, like, doing a workout.
Woo!
Well.
All right, I changed my rankings. Taylor Scott is at the top of them. I will take no further questions at this time.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I can't imagine anyone would want to hear anything else from us at this point.
Anyone made it past you singing Michael McDonald, I feel like
they made it for the reward of us scanning and scrolling through an NRI's Instagram page
that you cannot see unless you click on the article link. Which
not great for an audio medium, there, John.
No,
we gotta work on this. We'll work on it for next time.
Yama, work on it.
Thank you, everyone who sent in questions. And we will be back next week. I leave for spring training, so I'm not exactly sure how the podcast is going to go. We might have to sit around without me.
Figure yourself out.
But I will have dispatches from spring training next time I talk to you.
Yeah, buddy.
All right.